ॐ भरताय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्धतामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी. Okay, chapter 17. In the last verse of chapter 16, Krishna said to Arjuna, Tasmat Shastram Pramanam Te. Therefore, let the Shastra, let the Vedas be a Pramanam, let them be the authority for you in terms of what is to be done and what is not to be done. Karya, karya, vivastita, the things that are enjoined upon you to do, the things that you should not do, the things to be done and not to be done. And then, having understood that, then let those be the karmas that you choose to do, right? Those karmas that have been enjoined by the Vedas, by the Shastra. Having become clear, having understood, then do those karmas. Those karmas, you are qualified for those karmas. Those are the karmas that are meant for you to do, okay? So then, it's okay. It's just a little bit of water.
What's wrong?
Nothing.
It's on the wood, too.
It doesn't matter.
Alrighty, then.
Alrighty, then.
Different mouse?
No, it's just...
Some water. Tasmat Shastram Pramanam. Yeah, the mouse is on this side.
Oh, it's over there.
No, I'm kidding. Okay. Okay. So, having said this, this gave a little idea to Arjuna. He got a little thought. He says, Labdha Prashna Bija Arjuna. Arjuna, then that statement of Krishna became like it became the seed of a question in Arjuna's mind. And so he kind of went with it, thinking, you know, in terms of sattva, rajas, and tamas, he started evaluating Shraddha. So this whole chapter, really chapter 17, is on Shraddha. Because if you say, therefore let the Shastra be a Pramana, be the authority for you, be a Pramana for you. Pramana means it really is what is the authority in terms of making you understand Dharma and Adharma, what is right, what is wrong. It becomes the Pramana for even giving you moksha, self-knowledge. When the Shastra is functioning as a pramana for you, Shraddha is involved. So this whole chapter is going to be on what does it mean to have Shraddha? Mm-hmm. Swamiji, when he did his commentary on this, he didn't even want to translate the word. It's such a huge word. The word Shraddha is a very huge word. And so this chapter is going to be dealing with Shraddha. So let's look at this first verse. And this is Arjuna's question. This is Arjuna uvacha, ye shastra vidimutsrija, yajante shradayan vitaha, tesham nishtatuka krishna. Tesham nishtatukha krishna sattvam aho rajastamaha sattvam aho rajastamaha ye shastra vidim utsrija yajante shraddaya anvitaha. So shraddaya anvitaha tesham nishta tu ka Krishna sattvam aho rajas tamaha. He says, talking about a certain type of people, and no one specific, just these type of people. So he says, yea, those people are these people who are Shraddhaya Anvitaha, who themselves are endowed with Shraddha. They have Shraddha. And these people, endowed with Shraddha, they yajante. They worship different. Yajante means to worship, to offer pujas, to do rituals. So it's to perform a worship or to perform a ritual, to perform any type of ritual or puja. It comes from the root yaj. It means to spread out, to spread out a ritual. So those who endowed with Shraddha, they worship. But they worship having utsrija, having given up that the shastra viddhi, not following closely, either giving up altogether how that worship is to be done according to the shastra. Shastra viddhi, there's two words here, viddhi and nisheda. The viddhis that for the shastra, the viddhis are those injunctions, positive injunctions. These things are to be done. Like say if you were to perform a ritual, for instance, Agnihotra, that's a ritual that is performed daily in the Vedic culture. It's performed according to a lot of viddhis. There's particular ways that that ritual is to be performed, as many, many rituals are like that. They all are following different viddhis, different injunctions. This is the appropriate way to do that, do it, this particular ritual. Or this particular puja, this particular form of worship, it follows definite viddhis. The other word is nisheda. So the viddhis, these are the viddhis, these are the nishedas. These are the things not to do. The viddhis are the positive injunctions, the nishedas are negative injunctions. So this utsrija comes from this. Utsrija are just the overarching group of do's and don'ts that are held in the viddhi, that are held. So here what he says, having for the utsrija, having given up these shastra viddhis, I'm thinking of another word, I'll get to it later. Those people endowed with Shraddha, they're worshipping, but not following the viddhis of the shastra. They're not doing it properly. They're doing it maybe somewhat properly, maybe a little bit properly, maybe somewhat properly, but not complete. Right? So these people, though, they have Shraddha. So it says, if this is so, Tesham Nishta Tukha Krishna. Hey Krishna, he goes, if this is so, then what is their Nishta? Means, what is their commitment? What does the performance of that worship, what does the doing of that worship get them? What is the basis? What is going on in them as they perform these rituals? What do they get from it? What is their nishta? What is their commitment as they do that? He says, is it sattvam? Is what they are doing, is it sattva? Or is it rajas? Or is it tamas? And so, this is his question. His question is not clear. According to Krishna, and the way Krishna answers the question, and according to Arjuna, I mean, it's according to Krishna and according to Shankara, the question really is about Shraddha, and the whole chapter is about Shraddha. So is he asking, what is he asking exactly about Shraddha? Is the Shraddha sattva, rajas, or tamas? You know? Is the ritual sattva, rajas, and tamas? Mm-hmm. And so what Shankara says in his commentary is a question like this, Krishna realizes that actually we have to parse this question a little bit. We have to take it in parts, you know, to try to make exactly what the actual meaning is. Because Shraddha itself, we can look at Shraddha in terms of the object of worship, we can look at Shraddha in terms of the method of worship, we could look at Shraddha in terms of the nature of the antakarana, the nature of the mind. So what Krishna decides to do is to spend the whole chapter on analyzing what exactly we mean by Shraddha. Mm-hmm. So just for starters, before we get into this, I'll say some of the things that the Shankaras has said and what Swamiji has said about this. Sometimes Swamiji, just in terms of Vedanta, has defined Shraddha as faith pending understanding. The Shraddha in terms of the Vedanta, in terms of the qualifications for a student, is considered one of the most important qualifications. So let me tell you, just in terms of the mumukshutvam, the adhikarityam, the qualifications for a student, it fits into, this word Shraddha fits into what we call the sadhana chatushtya, the fourfold chatushtya, the group of four qualifications called sadhana chatushtya. That first qualification, I'm just going to do this very briefly for you. The first qualification is viveka for a student. Viveka means this, I'm almost wondering if we can tell that guy to go away.
Well, if we close the window, it might help.
It'll get hotter, though.
No, it'll get too hot.
It's already hot.
Well, maybe he'll become quiet now that I'm thinking about it.
Be helping.
No.
Can we tell him?
No.
Would you rather hear or be hot?
I'd rather be cool.
Huh? Yeah.
Nope, I'm not the kind we can tell. So I thought I'd just make a quick little judgment there. Nope. But I have to be cool. I can't teach if I get too hot. Okay. That's all right. I'll get it under control. Hang on a minute. So let me just run through the sadhana chatushtya, because shraddha in the whole tradition is a huge word, and it's a huge word for us within Vedanta. So the sadhanas means the means that allow you to get somewhere. Mm-hmm. So for instance, a car could be a sadhana. It could be the vehicle. The vehicle could be the sadhana, the means to get you somewhere. But here in Vedanta, the sadhanas are either shravana, manana, nididhyasana. Shravana means being exposed to the teaching with clarity. Manana means resolving any doubts about whether or not what the teaching is revealing is true. Nididhyasana is contemplating upon what you've realized at the time of teaching. So the shravana, manana, nididhyasana becomes a sadhana for the knowledge itself. But the sadhana for the vehicle, the mind, there's a sadhana for the mind to be able to receive this knowledge. And those sadhanas for the mind to be qualified, are fourfold. That's why chatushtya means a group of four. So sadhana chatushtya means the group of four sadhanas. So these all have to do with the qualifications of a student. So the first sadhana is viveka. Viveka means that for whatever reason, your mind has become one that is able to and wants to, and for whatever reason, you are now differentiating between what we call nitya and anitya. Nitya means that which is true, that which is real, that which is not subject to change. And anitya is that which is subject to change, right? And so for a mumukshu, for somebody who comes to this teaching, they don't know what is nitya yet. They don't know Brahman. They don't know the self as being free from change. But what they do know is that every single thing that you experience, from your mind to your sense organs to your body to the world, is anitya. Mm-hmm. That is clear. Every single thing that you experience has a beginning and an end. And because of that, there is no possibility of you gaining anything stable from the creation, because the creation itself is bound by change. So everything that you gain from it is going to be time-bound. That becomes clear. Once that becomes clear, the second qualification is vairagya, recognizing that anityatvam, everything is time-bound, I lose my interest in trying to gain any lasting fullness or happiness or completion from these time-bound things, because it is impossible. Not because there's something wrong with me, but because the very nature of the creation isn't capable of giving that. Time, what is time bound can't give something that's timeless. And so that means all of my joy, all of my happiness, all of my love is a time bound experience. And that means it's bordered by dukkha, right? Love ends in dukkha. If the love or the fullness or the happiness is associated with an object that is time bound. So that's the vairagya. So if I add the viveka, the vairagya is going to come. If the viveka comes and the vairagya comes, it is likely that what the fourth one that we call mumukshutvam will come. Because once I have viveka and vairagya, I don't have a solution now. How can I have a solution? The world can't give me a solution. My body can't give me a solution. My mind can't give me a solution because they're all part of the problem. They're all anitya. They're all time-bound. So there is no solution in this world. And so in my sphere of experience, there is no solution. And so then I become a mumukshu, one who's desirous of liberation, of moksha, because I can't get it myself. The mumukshu is the one who recognizes this liberation that I'm seeking, this freedom that I'm seeking is not just something that can be gained, that I can gain for myself or that the world can give me. So I'll throw up my hands to Ishwara and say, if you're there, if there is such a thing, you know, please help me. That's the prayer of the mumukshu. The third qualification, that's the fourth one, the third one has to do with, as a person becomes a mumukshu and has the viveka and vairagya, there's a certain set of qualities that begin to mature in your mind that will give the mind a certain amount of relative shanti that will later become an absolute shanti. The first quality that we notice and that needs to mature in us, that you have whatever degree you have, that it needs to mature, is shama. Shama means that you're able to let your thoughts come and go. That's a big thing. You have shama for most of your thoughts, for most of your emotions, for most of the things that pass through your mind. You can just let them come and you have a choice to let them go. That's shama, that freedom of choice. Dhamma kicks in when shama fails. When your mind gets stuck on an emotion, a reaction, or you're perseverating around something, you can't, the mind itself is caught, and say it's something emotional like an anger or a hurt or something that you want to act out, you know. Dhamma is what allows you to contain that shama, keep it to yourself, to work on it internally rather than act it out inappropriately. So dhamma is what allows you to not act out your feelings, your emotions, your thoughts in an inappropriate way. Like say you're raging at somebody, but it wouldn't really be appropriate for you to scream at them, you know. And so dhamma allows you to contain it. You're raging at somebody, you want to rip their head off. Well, dhamma allows you to contain those feelings. So shama, dhamma, means you have self-control. You know, you have some control over your mind and over your... If you don't have control over your mind, you have some control over containing the mind. So you have your control over whether that mind acts out or not. So to whatever degree you have, you're going to have some shama and some dhamma. The next one is uparati. Uparati means I can persevere. I'm not a dilettante. Say just in life in general, if I'm interested in a subject, I can go with it for years. Not for days or weeks or months. I can go with it to the point of attaining mastery. I have that capacity to stay with something. Sometimes uparati is just, in India, in reference to the Vedanta, it's called sannyasa. Sannyasa, but this, the way in the West, the way I'm saying it is probably the correct way to take it. Unless you have what we call, you take guna sannyasa in your mind, what is the most important thing to you is this knowledge. That's when we say sannyasa for uparati. But the main question is, if the viveka, vairagya, and mumukshutvam is there, then the uparati is going to be toward this knowledge, means I have what it takes to stay with something to completion. You know, which is a tremendous thing, actually. You have to have that quality to master anything. So I'm able to stay with this knowledge until mastery. So that's upadati. Titiksha is the ability to endure opposites, all of the opposites. It's hot out, it's cold out, you know. It's this way or it's that way. This person's like this, or the situation's like that. It's always changing. Mm-hmm. So my ability to accommodate all of these opposites, and because that's not where my heart is. My heart is in gaining this knowledge. And so I can accommodate the world because my focus or the upadati, my love, my commitment is really toward gaining this knowledge. So titiksha means that I can have space for things to go through the natural opposites that they go through in the world. Either it's in terms of sukha and dukkha, pleasurable situations and unpleasurable situations, or it's in terms of things like heat and cold. You know, whatever the opposites are, that's fine with me. I can deal with it. My mind isn't totally engaged in all of that. That's titiksha. Samadhanam. Samadhanam is the ability to become single-pointed, like in contemplation, or when you're listening, can you your mind available? Mm-hmm. It's a big thing for the mind to be available. Like you can, if you're not interested, if the mind's very interested and needs this knowledge, like for the mumukshu, if they say about this knowledge in terms of your mind, it's kind of like how a person whose hair is on fire will go toward the water. If your hair's on fire, Swamiji elaborates this. Say a brahmachari is there, and he said, big jada, you know, and a spark goes up from the fire and lands right on his head. And so his hair starts to burn. And so how does he make his way over to the lake? How does he do it?
Fast.
He does it very fast. And that's all he thinks about. He doesn't saunter over thinking about this and that. So that samadhana means the mind is available. It's available for a class, it's available to listen. In contemplation, it's available to do that work. It's available to focus, you know, to be focused. That's samadhana. And last but not least is shraddha. And without shraddha, you know, in fact in the Gita it says, shraddhavan labhate jnanam. It's the one who has shraddha, that one gains knowledge. The one who has shraddha, that one gains knowledge. So Swamiji will translate shraddha as faith pending understanding. What he means by that, though, is that it's more than that. That's when you say, in reference to this knowledge, what allows you to listen to this knowledge? What allows you to commit to this knowledge, to see it through, to understand? It's a very incredible thing to analyze, actually, because until you have knowledge, you don't have it, right? And so what is it that allows a person to commit, pending understanding? It's not forever, but it means there's an availability of your mind and your heart to expose yourself to this teaching without really knowing that that particular teacher knows, because you really don't know that the teacher knows until you know, right? It's just how it is. And also to know that that knowledge can really is the knowledge and can deliver the goods. How do you know? So there's some sort, with shraddha, there's some sort of commitment, there's something that's bigger than you. There's something, some intuition, there's something that feels right, there's something that allows the mind to say yes. You know? In certain ways, we have shraddha all the time, just in, say, if you go to, if you're in school, if you're in a university, and you take a course in science by a teacher who is reputable, has a good reputation, then, and you have a textbook, that teacher has given you that textbook, right? You may or may not have shraddha But there's a good chance you will, because the teacher is reputable, and you and you believe that they're giving you a reputable textbook. And that shraddha in the teacher and in the text allows you to study, because otherwise it would be a phenomenal waste of time, right? So something has to give you the go-ahead to do that. It's the same in Vedanta, and the stakes are large here because the question is so important, you know? We're talking, it's a mumukshu is somebody who has recognized that there is a big, big problem here.
Well.
Yeah, that you cannot solve. You means as a human being with the sense organs and the means of knowledge you have available to you, you cannot solve the problem, because you are able, through the analysis of the world, you are able to recognize that the very nature of the world is such that it prohibits you from being able to solve the problem, because it is incapable of giving you what you are seeking. And that's not, it's not doing that on purpose. It's not an emotional thing. It's just the reality, the nature of things. And so when you realize that, that's a huge, huge problem. And that's when you, and that's what makes a mumukshu. Nothing less than that is really a mumukshu. Because if you haven't realized that problem, right, then you can still fix it. You can do it. But when you really realize the problem, you now realize that you cannot fix it. And so upon that realization, you hold your hands up to Bhagavan and, you know, to God, and if you're there, you know, please help me. Please help me. It's real. It's not a phony prayer. It's for real, you know. Because how to become whole? How to become complete? How to become free? There should be an end game. There should be a way that I can complete myself, that I can say, now all that is to be done has been done. All that is to be done has been done. You know? That the ananda that I have had glimpses of, I can discover it. I can have that. Because it's only when I have that ananda that I know that's me. You know? I have that from, I know, that's me, that's how it's supposed to be. I know that. And yet, it's so ephemeral. So where does it go? So I need that because I know that it's the truth and I don't know how to get it. And I know that the world can't give it to me. So this sadhana chatushtha is very, very important. And so in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, you know, shraddhavan labhate jnanam. It's the one who has shraddha that can gain knowledge. And so now it's so interesting because Krishna is now doing the whole chapter, really, on shraddha. What really is shraddha? You know?
That door's from back out.
Shraddha is, you can say, and this is what I think Arjuna is getting at here, and this is kind of the seed of his doubt. There are many types of shraddha, because the shraddha really is your commitment, you know, it's, and your commitment in life, like, what is important to you? What really is your value system? You know, what drives you? That's what he's saying about the nishtha. Mm-hmm. What is really driving you? What do you really hold to be true? What do you really hold to be dear? What is most important to you? Mm-hmm. And so shraddha, this shraddha can't be superficial. You know, it's going to be an expression As in Krishna will say later, it's the expression of the whole person, of the whole mindset, you know. It can even be like Krishna says, as we'll see, well, I'll wait till we get to that verse. It's the whole, the deepest value system of what you believe in and what will lead to your well-being, you know. That's it. What will really, really lead to your well-being, you know. Maybe, and this is from what Krishna was talking about in the previous verse, what if you believe that what will really lead to your happiness and your well-being is money? That will do it. And so, what is my highest value is money. And so, this is the problem that a thief can have. A thief can have, if the highest value is money, and the thief has an opportunity to get some money by illegitimate means some adharma, if he feels that he won't get caught and that he can get away with it, and his happiness and well-being and his value, self-worth, all of these things are tied up with money, then, and he doesn't believe he'll get caught, then he could very well take to illegitimate means to get that money because that's what he needs to be whole and complete. And so it's not a question for him of dharma or adharma, because the dharma aspect he hasn't recognized. He hasn't recognized in terms of dharma what he'll lose by performing the adharma. That he hasn't recognized. So he has recognized that if he can have the money, then he would be able to do this, this, and this, and that would make him happy. And so the dharma, adharma, viveka, that's not there, you know. But so in terms of his commitment to, what's his commitment, you know, his commitment, what is his value system? So when we're talking about Shraddha, it's the value system, it's the commitment. So maybe his commitment, his value system is toward power and toward money, you know, and toward pleasure. Then that's where his Shraddha, that's the type of Shraddha he has, either going to be a Rajasic Shraddha or Tamasic Shraddha, you know, because that's where it's directed. So that's the type of, that's the what it's directed toward. So then you can say, oh, that Shraddha is a Rajasic type of Shraddha. So he's going to go through and look at it in all of these various ways. What would a Sattvic Shraddha be? We have to see, what would the Sattvic Shraddha be? Mm-hmm. If we look at it that way, then Krishna has to go through and say, well, if the Shraddha is Sattvic, then it's going to be directed toward these type of values, right? Mm-hmm. By toward these type of things. If it's tamasic Shraddha, it's going to be directed toward these type of things. But the Shraddha is still there. Like Ravana had a lot of Shraddha that in the Ramayana, mm-hmm. that doing certain rituals, for instance, he did a lot of tapas, a lot of austerities. He had Shraddha in the Vedas, that by doing these rituals and these austerities, he would gain these powers. And his whole interest was in gaining these powers in order to do wrong, in order to perform a dharma. But he had Shraddha, you know, and he did all of these austerities and followed like the all of the rules for being able to achieve those siddhis. You know, he had great Shraddha in it. But it was all for adharmic purposes. So what kind of Shraddha is that? Well, we say that's the Shraddha of a Rakshasa, or the Shraddha of an Asura. So he'll get into this type of thing. So Krishna, so Arjuna is seeing this, you know, and here he is in the middle of the Mahabharata war. Arjuna's in the middle of the Mahabharata war. He has Duryodhana, you know, and all of the Dhritarashtra brothers on the other side, who he grew up with. And he had many of his teachers, who were Dharmanishtas, on the other side fighting him. you know, because of their own needs and their own commitments. And so here he was in the middle of all of these people that he was, his teachers and his family, you know, and his all of his cousins and all of his, you know, his mentors. On one side or the other, he was in the middle of them. All of them have Shraddha. He knows that. All of them have Shraddha. All of them are Vaidikas. But what kind of Shraddha is it for somebody like Duryodhana? What Shraddha is that? Why did Bhishma make the choices he made? What kind of Shraddha is it? It's not that they don't have Shraddha. They have Shraddha. But what does it mean? Because they're not like the Duryodhana and the Dhritarashtras. They're Vaidikas, but then they're really skipping on the Shastra Viddhis, the things that they're supposed to do. It's not that they don't have Shraddha, but they're not doing everything properly. What is that? You know? So all of these doubts started to rise in Arjuna, because he sees, you know, all of these people contained within the Vedas, all have Shraddha in the Vedas, all performing rituals in the Vedas, but then maybe I perform a ritual for different reasons. Like, for instance, in Swamiji talks, and Arjuna Shankara talks about this. For instance, maybe I perform a ritual, a daily ritual, for Antakarana Shuddhi. Means I'm performing the ritual for Antakarana Shuddhi, for purity of mind, so that I can gain this knowledge. Mumukshus continue to perform rituals, you know. But why? What are they performing the ritual? So that they can get the Swarga Loka? Or so that they can get a lot of money, or that they can get more power? Why are they performing the ritual? All the rituals can be performed for Antakarana Shuddhi. That's a sattvaka. That would be considered sattvic. What if those very rituals are performed to accrue punya in order to gain, and doing certain types of tapas, in order to gain power over others? Mm. Right? Shraddha is there. But what is the motivation? So these are the type of things that he's going to look at. So here in the second verse, he says, so that's Arjuna's question, what are they? Mm-hmm. What's going on with the these type of people? You know, what type of Shraddha is it? So, so Krishna wants to answer this in a little bit more thoroughly than just giving a one-word answer. It's sattva, rajas, and tamas. So this type of Shraddha is sattva, rajas, and tamas. He's going to break it up into a little bit smaller pieces. This is Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Trivita Bhavati Shraddha, Trivita Bhavati Shraddha, Dehinam Sa Svabhavaja, Dehinam Sa Svabhavaja, Satviki Rajasi Chaiva, Satviki Rajasi Chaiva, Tamasi Cheti Tam Shrinu, Tamasi Cheti Tam Shrinu, Trivida Bhavati Shraddha, Dehinam Sa Svabhavaja, Satviki Rajasi Cha Eva, Tamasi Cha Iti Tam Shrinu. He says, Trivida Bhavati Shraddha. Shraddha is threefold. Trivida Bhavati Shraddha. Dehinam, for the Dehis, for those of us who have a body. A Deha is the body, Dehin is one who has a body. So for those of us who are embodied here, genitive plural, the Shraddha is threefold, and it is something that is Svabhavaja. Svabhavaja means there's going to be two ways we're going to take this. Svabhavaja means when at the time of death, for instance, at the time of death of your previous life, exactly who you are, is what moves forward. The accumulation of all your punya papa, everything that your value system, the whole person in one essence, you know, that is complex, one complex essence, is what moves forward to take the next body. And it is that one, that's the svabhava. It's that one then who attracts to yourself from the sanchitta karma, punya and papa from previous this life itself, the last life itself, or other lives, whatever is appropriate. Mm-hmm. It will attract to who you are, your own combination of punya and papa, 50-50, that will allow you to then take the next birth. Mm-hmm. So you come into this birth as a unique person. Mm-hmm. And that unique person with the karmas that will take you through, the prarabdha karma that will take you all the way through your birth, from birth to your death, you know, that person that you are, different from everybody else, is what you left your last life with. Mm-hmm. That's your svabhava, right? Now, this svabhava is going to be the tendencies and just the, I don't know, kind of the samskaras. The samskaras that you start out with. And those samskaras are something that are mutable. They grow and change and transform. That's how we grow. You start with a certain personality, or what do you call it, just a certain essential nature. And that essential nature, for the most part, probably stays with you, but you're changing it also. You're growing and maturing, you know. And, you know, everybody, how to put it, how we assimilate our experiences causes us to go to become more dharmic or less dharmic. Mm. Right? It depends upon how we assimilate our experience. But we are starting from somewhere. We have a certain way of being, who we are. One way I like to think about this is, think of yourself as you are, the person that you are, and say you become completely psychologically, spiritually mature, and you're a mahatma. You become a jnani, okay? Now, and you become a jnani, I become a jnani, very mature person, we all become mature, and yet, we're all, you're you, I'm me, you're you, you're you. There's a certain nature, a svabhava that is there that has all along, you know, been transforming based upon, in terms of dharma, adharma, really, depending upon your assimilation of experience. But you're still a personality, and you're a personality, and I'm a personality, and we're a personality. You have that svabhava. That svabhava ja is what you start with. The important thing to understand, though, is that the svabhava, that the antakarana, the mind, the sukshma sharira that's born into this body starts with, is something that is mutable, you know. But you still have your own given personality, and then the personality that as you grow up, say you go through the first year, second year, third year, fourth year, up through the seventh, you're affected by your family. You're affected by your environment, definitely. Carl Jung says, you know, you spend your whole life working out the first 4 years. And we pick up a lot of stuff. But then all of the stuff that we pick up, the good stuff and the hard stuff, they bless us. It's what gives us, if we handle them for our growth, you know, it gives us empathy. All of the hardship that you've had in your life, all of the hurts and pains, the weird parenting, all of the things that we've all gone through in our life, is what gives us compassion. It's what gives empathy. It's what gives you understanding. You know, so you can understand another person. I'd say you've never had anything but swargaloka on this earth. There is no swargaloka on this earth. Mm-hmm. But then how can you have empathy, you know, if you yourself haven't had to deal with any issues?
Thank God.
So we've all had to deal with issues, and if we deal with our issues in a way that allows us to grow, then that becomes a beautiful gift. Those issues are all gifts because they allow us to grow. And to the degree that we choose dharma in the middle of our issues, then we become strong. And then that antakarana becomes beautiful, it's beautiful, you know? So, what the thing to understand when they say this for Bhavaja, this threefold Shraddha is something that belongs for all of the dehis, for all of us, you know? The Shraddha is threefold, you know? You're born with a certain disposition. The disposition can be more sattvic, more rajasic, it can be more tamasic, you know. But what do you do in that with that disposition? It depends totally on how you assimilate your experience. That's how we grow, you know. Like hopefully you see in yourself, at least for the people who are just in light of this knowledge, you can see your own maturing. The things that used to upset you in a certain way, or the ways that your mind used to react, or all of these type of things, it goes on changing. You become more, there's more shanti inside. There's more inner kindness. So the greatest shanti is your inner kindness. If the inner kindness toward your own problems, your own hurts and all of this is there, shanti is there. And all of the problems have a friend inside. Those problems have a friend inside, that's that kindness, that shanti, then all of those problems become, you know, gifts in terms of your empathy for others. Because mm-hmm. you're not the problem, you're the shanti. Mm-hmm. Right? It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. So in that way, we all continue to grow and grow and grow. So this sahaja, the swabhavaja, this swabhava, one's own nature is something that is in flux and is and is changing. So, but what he's saying is that the Shraddha that you have, your Shraddha, is very much in line with who you are, with your nature. Like say your nature is very rajasic, or it's very aggressive. Say it's an assertive, aggressive nature that wants power. That's more the rajas, you know, that is angry and wants power. Then your Shraddha will be around that. What I need and what makes me strong, what makes me whole, what makes me important is my power. And so I have Shraddha in that gaining of power. That's what I believe. And so all of my pujas, all of my rituals, all of my prayers are for what? Power. You know, all of my tapas is for power. So that's rajas. See what I mean? And so that's because that's what's going on in that person's heart. And so the Shraddha follows who you are. That's what he's saying. So there's going to be these three types of Shraddha: sattvic, rajasi, and tamasi. So may you listen to these three types, he says, okay? May you listen to them. Because I'm going to tell you all about them. We'll do it next week. Swasti prajabhyah paripalyantam nyayena margena mahim mahishaha go brahmane vyashubhamastu nityam loka samasta sukino pavantu kale varshatu parjanyah prithivi sasya shalini desho yam kshobarahitah Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kaschit dukkha bhak bhavet Asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor ma amritam gamaya, om purnamadah purnamidam purnat purnamudachyate, purnasya purnamadaya purnameva vasishyate, om shanti shanti shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha. Harihi Om.
What was the fourth of those, the second set of qualities again? I missed that one.
Shama Dharma Uparichi Titiksha. Titiksha.
No, the after that, there's viveka,
vairagya,
mumukshutvam, and...
Well, the fourth one is mumukshutvam, so it goes...
Oh.
But I said it, I usually say these three first, so viveka, vairagya, the first is viveka, then vairagya, then the fourth is mumukshutvam, and the third one is called the shamadhi shatka. Shatka means a group of six.
Mm-hmm.
Shama adi, beginning with shama.
Oh.
So Shama Adi Shatka, Shamadi Shatka. The group of six beginning with Shama. So you have Viveka, Vairagya,
mm-hmm.
Shamadi Shatka,
mm-hmm.
right? And then Mumukshutvam.
And that group of six is to create a peaceful mind.
It's the shanti. It's just ways of looking at the capacity, the shanti and the capacity of the mind. Yeah, so it has to do with having control of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I also thought to be born with a disposition, to carry a disposition over from, you're not a clean slate.
You're not a clean
slate.
You're not really a clean slate. That's why every baby is different. They all have their own unique little personalities, you know. They're in a sense a clean slate in terms of the experiences that they're gathering, but you're not really a clean slate in terms of all of the samskaras that you're bringing with you. So you find that certain things come very easy to you, certain things are just totally foreign. You know, some things you take to very easily. You'll find that in the subject matters you study in school, for instance, mm-hmm. some are come naturally to you and some don't. All of a sudden, maybe you're very good in the piano. You know, all this type of thing. Those are all some scars. Yeah.
And that
they also say around that your body, the physical body that you get, is appropriate for your karma and for all of your samskara, for the sukshma sharira that is incarnating at this, the subtle body that's incarnating at this time. This is the body for that subtle body to go through all of the prarabdha karma. This is the body for that.
So if you're born disabled, or
if you're born, say you're born disabled, and it's not something that's like in some form an abuse of free will. There's free will involved that something can happen. But say you're born with a disability, then there's something for you to work out through that disability.
Or if you develop a chronic disease, same thing.
Same thing. If it is in the prarabdha and not abuse, it's hard to tease that out. What is by abuse? Like, we can't tease it out really between prarabdha and free will. Like, for instance, it would be our prarabdha to be born at this particular time.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's a lot happening in this particular era that we're subject to. We can say that's because of free will. I mean, that's because of the prarabdha that we're subject to it. But there's a lot of abuse in this era.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many toxins.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many adharmas that are going on that are bad for human beings. They're bad and negative in general for human beings. So there's this blend of the prarabdha and the free will and the abuse of free will. Like, say, for instance, that's why you can't tease it out. You have to just see all of these different ingredients.
So you would never really
You can never really tease it out. Yeah.
Tease what? What are you teasing?
Teasing out the prarabdha, the free will, the abuse of free will. It's all, everything's way too interrelated for you to figure out.
And
Bhagavan can figure it out. It's kind of...
And you do, even though it's, say, an abusive situation, you come to that, right? Or is it always...
Well, it's hard to say. You know, you can say in your karma there's a... maybe in your astrology chart there's something that's, you know, that, you know, a weak point there. You have to be careful, something like that. But what I'm saying, Edward, it's too much to figure out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can understand that there's such a thing as prarabdha karma and how that can work, and that free will must be intertwined with it. Because the free will is always taking place within the prarabdha karma.
Mm-hmm.
That's never not going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah. So they're affecting each other continually interrelated and involved with each other.
Right.
So say you try to rip the two apart, it's not really possible. Because everything that you do, think, all is taking place within the prarabdha.
It's massive.
It's massive, but... I find it very helpful, you know. If you try to analyze it too much, you can't, that's impossible, because you can't put the prarabdha over here and the free will over here and this karma over here. It's not going to separate like that.
So how do you use it then? I mean, to what extent?
For me, I see that there's a limited amount of free will, and that in fact, you can live your whole life responding to your prarabdha. That's what Swamiji does, really. I do, because of knowledge, self-knowledge, you don't need to make things happen. You can just let Ishwara be. And so, as a jnani, you can just enjoy your prarabdha karma. This is happening, now this is happening, and I continue to respond to it and live in it and be present to the moment, which is a wonderful thing. I think it's hard for people to be really present and live their life, because you're usually worried about what you did, or what happened to you, or you're worried about what you're going to do, you know. But for one of the great gifts of having knowledge is that you can actually live the life that you have right here, right now, and be present to the prarabdha karma and enjoy watching Ishwara unfold. You know? In the unfoldment of Ishwara for you personally is the unfoldment of your prarabdha. And what's so beautiful to understand about that is this body, mind, sense organs, everything about you that makes you up, this jiva here, is for this prarabdha. It's not for some other prarabdha. It's for this prarabdha. You fit here. It's yours. You know, you can totally count on it.
Well, then that seems like that would be the easiest. Then, like for
trouble free. Because it's yours. It's very stressful when you're trying to have somebody else's prarabdha. Think that you should have somebody else's. But if you can actually be present to your own prarabdha and let that be Ishwara, it is Ishwara, but in your mind it has to be Ishwara, you know? And then this body, mind, sense organs is totally taken care of by the prarabdha, because the prarabdha isn't just this body. This is the prarabdha, the situation. Ishwara is the prarabdha, you know. And so when that's the case, then if this is Ishwara, this prarabdha karma is Ishwara, then what is my role in it? Is to just do that Ishwara arpana buddhi, which is what? What is dharma in the situation? It's all about dharma.
Next.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is next, and let me do my best.
How should I respond to this?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right.
Dharma, 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 dharma. That's all it's about. Because there's no notion, if there's no jnana, there's no notion that my ananda is out here somewhere. Because the ananda is the nature of the self. That's the ananda. Why that illusion of it being out here takes place is because when you fulfill, say you have a desire for something, when you fulfill the desire, you have a moment of ananda because your mind is relaxed.
Mm.
For that moment, the mind is desireless, so it's happy. You know? Yeah, but it's not happy. It has nothing to do with any object out here. It's happy because the mind is quiet for a moment. It's quiet because for a moment it's desireless. But what about, and so it's not obstructing, you know, it's not it's not competing with your own nature. In fact, it's reflecting your own nature. So for jnani, the mind goes directly to the source for its wholeness, for its fullness. It doesn't ask Ishwara to contain it in little objects here and there. And that means that you can really, really be interested in the creation. The creation is infinite intelligence. When you think of the creation, the Swamiji will call it manifest knowledge, infinite manifest knowledge. It's infinite intelligence. And so when you see all the things that are taking place, all of the people, all of the situations that are the complexity of what is taking place, what is the best possible outcome for all involved? You know, it's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then what about when there's a plethora of a dharma? What is the best possible outcome to handle all of that adharma? Adharma is when you're pushing against the wall of dharma. And that's creating a rub, that's creating a problem. It's not that the creation can't handle it, it's just the handling is painful.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, your whole relationship with the world changes. It's much more interesting.
You make it sound almost like it's watching a movie of some divine character. I mean,
I would say it's an appreciation of Ishwara,
mm-hmm.
and seeing, and then another really interesting thing for me is when, because we all have our punya and papa,
mm-hmm.
you know, how are these situations going to work out?
How are they going to resolve?
How's Bhagavan going to handle it, you know?
The great soap opera.
Yeah.
It's very... But when you start having respect for the creation, respect for the universe as Ishwara, then respecting the intelligence, the infinite intelligence of the creation, then it's very... very interesting. You look at it as having a much greater intelligence than you do.
Mm-hmm. And even it's an intelligence beyond our understanding, because our mind
it's
is
so
limited
yeah.
in
yeah.
its function. You know,
yeah.
it can't be an infinite mind.
It's kind of where I like to think of it is, say if you're having a dream. The dream is the whole story. And you as a jiva, little individual in the dream, have only a partial story.
Mm-hmm.
And compared to
the
strength of a huge dream, I mean, if you're trying to go against the karma of the whole karma, that's pretty tough.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to probably get very far pushing it up against the edges. You'll just find yourself flicked back into... you know, into your proper
place.
Into your place. You know. But the reality is the whole picture. And so say if you view your interest is more in the whole picture rather than just in the likes and dislikes of this jiva.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can have the likes and dislikes as preferences. But if you think that this is just a concrete, inert universe, and you're just a little pocket of consciousness moving through it, that's very frightening and also not true. So you're missing a lot of the subtleties. You know, your mind won't let you pick up on the meaningfulness of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I'm wondering, is that the source of Arjuna's problem here, because, you know, that, I mean, I can relate to what he's saying. I mean, you can see people who are, you know, maybe they're technically, or they're a part of the culture, but they're kind of messed up in a certain way, to be very general about it. And that can be very challenging. You know, you wonder what's happening with those people, and what does it say about Vedanta and all that kind of thing. I don't know. It sounds like maybe Arjuna is wrestling with these kinds of, that sort of, you know, the question's not phrased specifically that way, but he's looking at Duryodhana and others, and like
I think he is, like some of the great people, like some of his Drona and Bhishma and some of his teachers who are Vaidikas, very dharmic in his own situation, his brothers, his family, and everything,
mm-hmm.
you know. And Krishna is going looking at all this asuric behavior. The whole chapter 16 has been on the asuras, which are Duryodhana and that whole group. He's kind of describing them. If you've read the Mahabharata, he's describing the rakshasas,
right,
and the asuras and all of that, and, you know, in spades, so very clearly. And yet, some of these people that are on the other side are good people,
mm-hmm.
you know. But then, what does it mean when you have shraddha, but you're doing things that are really not enjoined by the shastra?
Mm-hmm.
You're worshiping in a way that's really not exactly what the shastra is telling you to do, and yet you're a good person and you have shraddha. It's just complicated. So his question is not very clear. That's why Krishna spends the whole time,
mm-hmm.
you know, parsing that question to really understand. But I can see where he's coming from,
so
why he would be asking this question.
Is that let me get back to my question, Edward. I'm sorry, but is that what he is going on? What you just described just before I asked my question, is that what he's going through?
I think he's going through a lot of things that aren't clear. And
okay.
I think Krishna is making it clear.
I see.
I don't think he knows
quite.
He's
not clear. Okay.
I don't think he's clear.
It's hard to say what his motivation really is.
Yeah.
Okay,
I don't think he really knows, but it's as Shankara says, there's this seed of doubt that has been planted in his mind. And so he just asks Krishna in the best way that he can, because we've been talking about all this time the asuras and the Daivi Sampat and the asura Sampat, you know, and then Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas. And Shraddha is so important, a tradition, not just Shraddha. I talked a lot about Shraddha for a mumukshu, but Shraddha is bigger than that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just for a mumukshu, it's Shraddha in the Vedas themselves. Shraddha in Ishwara, Shraddha in all of the different forms of worship, Shraddha in the Dharma, you know. And so these people have Shraddha. If they have Shraddha, you know, and yet they're not doing everything quite correctly, what does that mean? Where are they situated? What's their nishtha? What's their commitment? What's that about? You know, what does that all mean? Is it that their Shraddha is, there's a difference in Shraddha? There's a sattvic Shraddha? It's like saying, is there an asura Shraddha and a daivi Shraddha? Because the whole last chapter was between the asuras and the daivis. The asuras would be the rajas and tamas. The daivi would be sattvic. So how can this be that there are this shraddha and all of these different things happen? So.
Thank you.
Read what Swamiji has to say about it. He also says it's not. But Krishna has to go in and make his question more, answer his question in a way that Arjuna doesn't even understand that he's asked. Mm-hmm. The same thing happened in chapter 2 when Arjuna said to Krishna, please tell me how does a wise person walk? How does he sit? How does he talk? How does he sit? How does he walk? Mm-hmm. And so Krishna's not going to say, well, he walks with a fast gait and he sits and stands slowly. That's not what Arjuna really meant. He wanted to know, you know, what's going on inside.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't know how to say that. And so this question also, it's like, He doesn't know how to say it, but it's an important question. There's something niggling in his mind. So Krishna spends some 17 verses or so answering it.
So I have a question on nishta.
Nishta.
Nishta?
Nishta.
Nishta. Okay.
Not nishta. Shta.
Shta.
Yeah, shta.
Shta.
Nishta.
Nishta. Okay.
It's long on nishta.
Okay, well, it almost sounds like you've defined it as commitment. It almost sounds like it's
it has different
intention.
It has different meanings.
Okay.
Like if we say, one of the most common meanings, if we say this person has jnana nishta,
uh-huh.
Okay, that means that they're very, very committed and doubt-free in their knowledge.
Okay.
So it comes from the root sta. The root sta means to stand. So they're firmly placed in something. That you have nishta in something. The stand, you're just placed, you're situated, you're
okay.
firmly rooted
okay.
in something. So that's nishta.
Okay.
And so now that nishta can be, in terms of your knowledge, you have clarity.
Mm.
Okay. Or it can be in terms of your commitment. Like if you're a Brahmanishta,
mm-hmm.
you can say, well, you're firmly situated in Brahman,
mm-hmm.
or you can also view it that the person who's a Brahmanishta, their whole life and everything they do is committed to Brahman,
mm-hmm. okay.
you know, is resolved in that.
Okay.
So here the nishta is in terms of their shraddha, you know, what is their commitment?
Okay.
Where are they situated?
Mm-hmm.
In the, you know, what is their life commitment that they have this type of shraddha? What does that shraddha mean?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
Well, that prayer about for we eat, we offer the food up to Brahma,
mm-hmm.
and the fire of digestion. What chapter is that in? What verse?
From Marpanam. I think it's in, I don't remember, just I'll tell you in a minute. I can just go to that part here. No, I'll just tell you, I'm getting it. It's right here. Fourth verse, fourth chapter, 24. Verse 24, chapter 4, verse 24. What were you thinking? Why?
Oh, I think it's time for me to start remembering that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Usually chant this before we eat.
This might be answered later, maybe it's too big a question for this time of night, but it seems that there's implicit in the question is a question about Vedanta knowledge and how important is that versus the rituals, and must they necessarily go together, you know, the rituals, the culture, and especially for us Westerners it becomes more acute.
Yeah. Actually, that's really not very much in this verse,
okay.
but I brought it in because, right. at the beginning, because shraddha is such an important word for us, and so a lot of us kind of know that sadhana chaturshtya, so I wanted to take the word that we're so used to and then kind of expand it into the Vedas themselves, because to have shraddha in the Vedas or shraddha in the rituals means that you have a commitment to them, you take them to be true. And important for you. But maybe they're true and important for you for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And so maybe, also there's, as we'll see later, there's many different types of devatas. Maybe you're doing rituals to the devas, or maybe you're doing rituals to more the different types of ghosts or gandharvas. There are different types of deities also that you're doing the same rituals to. But then they're able to give you different types of polis, different types of results. And so there's also a difference in sattva, rajas, and tamas, in the, your choice of who you, who is the devata that you're choosing for the ritual.
Suppose that you and I, this may not be what it's about, but suppose the, you don't have a whole lot of interest in the Vedas themselves and those rituals, more in the Upanishads. And
right.
But that's not the question here.
That's not really the question here. But I understand that question coming from you. You don't really need, you're not, haven't been born in kind of the Vedic culture. So the thing for most Westerners, as you understand the Vedic culture, as it's taught through the Gita and different exposure that you have, you can translate it into what we call sadharana dharma, just the general human dharmas that are true for all human beings, you know. So then you understand it in that way. And you can translate like what the dharma they're talking about within their culture. There's different types of equivalents here, but it's all within our culture, the way we do things in our culture. So in India, they don't have to do those translations, but I don't think the translation is very difficult, really. But if you think that you have to be within a Vedic culture here in this culture, that isn't true. But you have to understand the spirit of it and how it relates to us in this culture. That makes sense?
Thank you.
Yeah, because tradition wasn't the Vedic. Like, they had a whole thing about cooking the food a particular way, and like it took all day sometimes.
Yeah, they have all different kinds of...
Yeah, you can't do that. I mean, everybody's working these days.
Even there.
Even there, exactly, yes, exactly. It has changed there, too.
It's not about trying to imitate, it's trying to understand the kind of the universal laws that are being lived out in a particular way there, but you can recognize the universal law and how it applies to us. Just like gravity, you know.
But Radha, you know, reading Swamiji's commentary on the, you know, the different forms of worshipping, you know, like the sattvic way of worshipping, and some people worship the asuras and to get something, and like it was kind of shocking to me, you know, because I thought getting out of Christianity I wouldn't have to deal with all that weird stuff, you know, and then the other thing is, it's like then Swamiji says it's ignorance, you know.
Yeah,
but I don't quite get that. I mean,
well, let's work our way.
We're still having to deal with
Look at it like this. Say you have knowledge, you're gaining knowledge, and all of this, all Vedanta. That doesn't mean that all of the types of people in the world change, or that all of their aspirations change. You'll still have people in the world that are seeking power. People who their highest thing is power and money. Then there are people who are different types of people who are more saintly people or religious people. Their aspirations and what is driving them is different, right? So all of these types of things still exist in the world.
But what's the point of saying that?
For Arjuna?
I mean, how is that relevant?
You mean in terms of what we're...
Yeah, in terms of what we're studying or trying to learn. I mean, it's... Today, a lot of the things seem to be self-explanatory. I kind of was reminded of an organizational behavior class that I took once, and the way that I farcically, made examples of that study was like, charismatic people are people who are charismatic leaders are leaders who are charismatic, and it's like. So Sattvic, Shraddha is Shraddha. That's Sattvic, and
but then you have to know what would that look like, Shraddha that is Sattvic as opposed to Shraddha that is Rajasic. What would that look like? That's Arjuna's. That's what Arjuna wants to know. So it's not enough to say, well, Shraddha that's Sattvic is Sattvic Shraddha.
Right.
But you have to understand how that manifests.
But isn't it fairly obvious that someone whose value is money or power is not valued towards knowledge. It's not.
I think the
so
reason
it's not going to be called sattvic.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the reason that all of this parsing is done, like the whole half of chapter 15 and half of chapter 16, is to try to help you identify in your mind, because he became very specific in chapter 16, of what are those qualities that as they rise in your mind are things to really recognize as a quality that is adharmic or a quality that you don't want. So that everything is really spelled out, you know. So maybe for you in some areas it's like, oh, that's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe there's a few things that he's going to say that aren't obvious, that are important. And for another person, there can be things that, oh, I hadn't thought of it like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then that becomes something that's conscious for that person. You know? I mean, I think that, like for me, this chapter, I could go through 15, 16, most of half of 15, 16, and 17, and kind of not be that interested in it. If I wanted to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to do that, so I'm becoming interested in it.
Okay.
You know, so that I can kind of take whatever there is to get from it.
Mm-hmm.
Though it's not probably one of my most interested things. See what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm having a kind of similar reaction as he did to the thing when you say your Prabhakarma carried you through to the end.
Yeah.
And then you're always somewhere having experience. Well, I kind of have a similar reaction. It's just kind of like you're saying, you're always going to have the experience until you're dead.
Okay.
Cool. That seems
it's
like it gives me no more new information at all about that. You know, I mean, you knew that.
Yeah.
And then you know,
yeah.
It's like some of them will be good and some of them will be bad. Got that.
Yeah.
Don't want any of the bad ones. So if you have any information about how to eliminate those, now I'm extremely interested.
Yeah.
You know, so, and then I think the key was, like, if you don't have raga devesas, then you really won't have a problem. I think
yeah.
that was really the key that I'm kind of pretending wasn't in there.
Well, let me say some more things about it that I think are keys and very important. And that is, when we're talking about prarabdha karma, what that means, you have to take, prarabdha karma means there's Ishwara, and it also means that the life that you're living has a trajectory. There is a plan. It's not just,
okay.
You see what I mean? It's not just this little jiva dropped onto the planet, inert planet, and you have to just carve your way out with no, it's just up to you.
Mm.
Whatever you do, you either make it or you break it. I mean, there's nobody helping you.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, this life has a trajectory, it has a blueprint that is there, but the creation supports. That its creation is a conscious Ishwar, is a conscious entity. And your life is meaningful from beginning to end. You know, and so you can actually experience the unfoldment of your life without the kartritvam, without the sense of doership. Or if you want the sense of doership, it takes a while usually for that sense of doership to go. So you can have shraddha or appreciate that the conscious trajectory of your life, which is Ishwara, and then within that you do dharma, you do your dharma, but you also recognize that the life is just, it's not something being carved out by you.
Hmm.
It's something that you're participating in.
That's a type of shraddha right there.
Yeah, but it's also it's a type of shraddha. It's a type of understanding also.
Hmm.
You know, as you start to understand Ishwara and the jiva and all, and this starts to become clear, then, in fact, your own experiences of the tremendous synchronicities in life, the fact that you can look backwards in life and see it's meaningful, but you can't look forward. There comes a time when you look backwards and forwards and all around, you see the intelligence that is greater than just in your mind, your intelligence in an inert world. You see the intelligence of the world of which you're a part of. And you start to appreciate that, and you start, as you more you understand, you start to relax into it. So then you're not carrying such a heavy burden. Carrying a heavy burden that really you don't need to carry.
And you make it sound like a kind intelligence also. It's not...
Well, the universe is not always kind. I'm not saying that it's a kind intelligence. I'm saying that it's an intelligence, you know, of which I'm a part. And I do see it, Dharma is benign. The self is benign. But there's a lot of opposites going on in the world. Everything is going on in this world, you know. You want to stay on the right side of it through Dharma. But I feel very... I would rather live out the life that Ishwara gave me, this Prarabdha, and participate in the Prarabdha that is mine than try to do anything else. That's why in that previous verse... that the wise person surrenders their, we just did this verse in the Manisha Panchakam, who surrenders their body to the Prarabdha. Mm-hmm. I give this to my Prarabdha.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's what we missed.
You missed the Manish, but I'll put it online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it possible to have... this sparks a lot of questions for me, Arjuna's question, to have, to be a mumukshu, but to be a dharmic in the pursuit of moksha.
A dharmic in the pursuit of moksha?
Yeah.
How would you do that?
It would be possible to, there's whole different levels of it, but I'll just throw out an outlandish example that maybe is unrealistic, but just, like, if you could kill somebody to get a place in, I don't know, say you cheated in trying to get to be at the ashram. Say you did that.
Yeah.
I just made this up.
Right? I know.
And someone else didn't get to go who was actually being honest in their application.
Yeah. Well, then you'd have to suffer that guilt and that adharma and all that, but it wouldn't stop you from being a mumukshu, but you'd still have to deal with the adharma, just like any of us. You do something that's adharmic or dishonest or something, then you have to carry that and deal with it and work it through, make amends somehow.
But you could still get moksha, and the other person wouldn't, and then you no longer have the power of the karma. I mean, is that... how it works?
I don't think so.
I mean, can you be a capitalist, I guess I'm saying, about moksha?
What are the values of a mumukshu?
Yeah, that's a good question. See that sadhana chatushtaya? The value.
Right,
so
this is my question. So if there's someone who doesn't really have these values very much, but there's still a... you know,
then they're not a mumukshu.
No, but the thing
maybe.
Is, what he's saying is that there's a range.
Yes.
Okay, so here's no values. No sadhana chatushtaya, they're not there. And here's, they're there completely. That means you have knowledge. But you come and you're somewhere here, okay? So then there's all these shortcomings. All those shortcomings we have to deal with. I would never agree that you would have the power to knock somebody off. A mumukshu.
You wouldn't have that.
No, because a mumukshu is a mumukshu. It says, and I have this is shraddha. This is, when a person is ready for this knowledge, this is the tradition and it's in the Shastra, as Swamiji said, when a person is ready for this knowledge, they get their teacher. When they're ready for it, they get their teacher, that's it. He'll joke and say, even if you're in Timbuktu, he laughs, your teacher will come to you. Because that's the promise of the Shastra. Because you're not carrying around that pramana. You're not carrying around those sense organs. Right? So when you become a mumukshu, then you meet your teacher. And that's it.
So some other voracious mumukshu isn't going to be able to mess you up.
No, but
okay.
But that voracious mumukshu,
yeah,
the two sharks might be in the same room together, you know?
Right.
Yeah. There's all kinds of things that go on, but nobody's going to get in the way of your gaining knowledge. I wouldn't accept that at all. When it's time for you to gain knowledge, you will gain knowledge. You'll be put in that situation. And then you have to deal with all of the raga dveshas and all of the difficulties and all of this cauldron, you know, being with a group of people that are all wanting to gain knowledge, and then you have to deal with each other and on all the things, life, it happens, you know. But it's good. You have to be able to deal with life, you know, to be free. Mm-hmm. That's why...
You said last time pain is the greatest teacher.
What?
I think you said last time pain is a great teacher.
Pain's a great teacher, yeah. It's like waving its hand. Something needs to be done here.
Can we go back to my other question? Mm-hmm. So, like, you said appreciating the plan. And then Edward brought up about, well, you know, is it always kind? You say it's not always kind.
I said the universe is not always.
Oh, you said the universe.
Yeah.
You didn't say the plan was or it wasn't. So what this reflects for me is that, like, when I grew up, it was in the Christianity scene.
Yeah.
So then it was like, God has a plan for you. And then that whole thing didn't really work for me.
Yeah.
That just seemed like, okay. So that's aside. And then it was like, okay, it was more of like a worldly mindset of that there really isn't, like, life is more random. There isn't really a plan for life. And I think that's kind of where still part of my mind is stuck with that whole kind of nihilistic. Part of my mind is still thinking that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it fights against this idea that Ishwara's got everything handled and that
well, some, like, a little man in heaven has everything handled.
Yeah.
But say if you look at this whole creation, just on a physical level, the whole creation is held together by an infinite series and order of
mm-hmm.
laws.
Okay.
Right? It holds the whole universe together. And there's an infinity of laws that are holding it together as one infinite unit. And these beings, all beings, are included in that series of laws. Right? And the series of laws are not just physical laws. They're emotional laws. They're psychological laws. They're dharma, adharma laws. The laws of the universe handle all aspects of the universe. Because I think in science what we want to do is just have the laws be the physical laws of the physical universe, but the laws that govern human behavior and human relationship, we don't count those. Those aren't really part of the universe.
Random.
Yeah, that's all random.
Yeah.
The only thing that's not random is the physical universe. You would say, no, everything is included and intertwined in that infinite network of laws, including dharma, adharma, emotions, psychology, physical body, relationships, energy, everything.
I think this question is essentially is, what or who can I trust in, and am I going to be okay? I think that's what this is all about.
Yeah.
You know.
I think that's true.
I'm still wondering.
Yeah. But it's not going to help me to tell you that in one sentence. Like, what
if
I say,
trust
in Ishwara.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not enough.
Yeah,
right.
Okay. So gaining knowledge is the answer then.
Yes, and gaining a real understanding of Ishwara also. That's part of gaining knowledge.
So I think that is connecting with my eroding problem with the whole God thing. It's eroding.
Yeah.
It's continuing to come.
Yeah.
It's still there, but it's not fighting it as much.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Because it didn't work so badly.
Yeah,
and
I totally understand.
It was so, that bringing in something that kind of seems like it's talking about the same thing, even though I intellectually know that it's not.
Yeah.
And it's just like,
Yeah,
allergy thing.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
Okay.
Can I ask another question? So, I sort of had something that might be an insight or it might not, but that... because I've had a lot of issues with the whole God thing, and then when you say things like, you talk about the plan or Ishwara's, you know, we're a part of this greater thing that Ishwara is doing, and Ishwara is a conscious being. What the way that can be not a problem for me is remembering that I am Ishwar. I mean, the self of Ishwar, you know, Ishwar is me, and I am Ishwar. I mean, I'm, you know, this physical body, mind, sense organs is just a part of Ishwar, but the self that I am is the same self as Ishwar. Mm. That makes that tolerable for me.
Well, that's the truth.
Mm. Yeah.
Good job. You kind of nailed it.
Yeah, that resolves that particular problem for me, at least. It seems.
Then I think it's just getting depth and clarity on understanding that.
And Nishta.
And all of the, all that, that implies. That understanding, all that that implies, is very helpful. And just makes it broader and firmer.
That's a toehold.
That's a little toehold. Good toehold. That's a big toehold. Yeah. That's a big toehold. All right, let's color the night.
You're welcome. I'm trying to remember the street my daughter was from.
What do you mean? Are you trying to go to you?
How near to you she might be.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I couldn't remember it.
I'll do that.
Yeah, right. More time. Oh,
yeah. Hi, Noah.
It's real near that little studio.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Sana.
Monterey.
Hi, Virginia.
No, Chancery.
Chennery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always, when I walk by there, I notice it's on the right. Hello.
Okay, everybody, I'm going to turn off.
Ah, cool.
See you next time.
See you next time.
See ya.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for this awesome class. It
was really?
Really awesome.
Yeah, good. For
me, it was.
I like it to be awesome. That's
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
May they all be awesome.
May they all be awesome.
Good.
May they all be awesome.